Hi, I'm Adam Sanford. I'm an academic life coach and professor in Los Angeles.
And I'm Dinur Bloom. I'm a college professor in Los Angeles.
And this is Learning Made Easier, a podcast where we discuss how we learn and how we teach and how they overlap. Welcome back to Learning Made Easier. This episode has no number. It's our Getting Back on Our Feet episode. Like many of you, COVID-19 derailed us, and we want to cover that before we get back to our usual recording scheduling routine.
We're sure our experience isn't unique to us. Many people probably had to set down some of the things they did which weren't central to survival in the last 2 months. We had to set down this podcast because both of us had classes to move online, students to help, family members who needed help, and many other experiences and situations that were, shall we say, not normal.
So we're going to talk about the hurdles we had to jump when our campuses closed down, what we've learned from this experience, and where we're going from here. So when it comes to hurdles, for me, first, it was getting everything online. Now, for me, that was actually pretty straightforward because all my classes were already flipped, so all my course content was already online. It was ready to go. Getting students adjusted to the new way of doing things, that was a bigger hurdle. I tried synchronous class meetings exactly once, and then I said, yeah, no. We are online now, so we're going to do this as if it's an online class. Finding out that about a third of my students had no reliable internet access or working computers at home meant that requiring synchronous meetings was just unreasonable and inequitable. So I quickly moved everyone to an asynchronous format. On my campus, we're really big about making sure that equity is a thing.
And this was less straightforward for me than it was for Adam, but it wasn't a total shift because for years, I've been posting my own PowerPoint slides ahead of lectures for my students. So that part stayed the same. But what was different for me was trying to present the info on the slides to an audience that I can't physically see in real time. And this is where working on this podcast helps because I don't see all of the listeners to this. Because I was recording video for my students, I had to be very mindful of how long each segment could be. And so I had to learn to chop up my lectures into different segments. And because there's video of me, video takes up a lot more bandwidth than audio alone. And so I had to make sure to not record anything beyond 12 minutes max. And I typically aimed for 8 to 10 minutes. Kind of like Adam, I know that a lot of my students don't have that consistent, stable internet or computer access. And our campus also encourages us instructors to be very mindful of inequity issues. And I did not force my students to have synchronous class meetings because of that.
Now, getting my students on board, it was easier with some classes than others. Like my classes that had students who were old hands at this school stuff, maybe they'd already taken an online class. The senior and junior students, they didn't have as big of a trouble getting moved online. I had a freshman intro course and they had just an especially difficult time. So many of them were very lost if they didn't have an in-class meeting twice a week, and we couldn't have that anymore. And I had one student email me and say, I know I'm going to fail your class. There's just no way I can do this if I can't be in a classroom because that's the only way I know how to make myself pay attention. And one of the things that I think this really brought home for me is there are people who are going to college who are just not ready yet. They really are not ready yet. And we may need to think as a nation and as a community in terms of academics about, okay, maybe they can pass all the classes, but do they have the time management that they need? Do they have the ability to stay on task? Do they have the ability to initiate work without being told what to do and having their hand held? And so this is something we might want to think about. And I had to also figure out how to determine attendance and how to replace mainly what we'd been doing during class meetings. And that took a lot longer than I wanted it to. I sent out a lot of surveys to my students using Google Forms in the first couple weeks, really to get the pulse of where my students were and what they needed from me at that point, which kept changing. It was a moving target and it was kind of hard to hit.
For me, losing the structure of in-person meetings really hurt, but it also provided some opportunities. I could record my lectures when I actually had energy, whether that meant I was recording them during our regular class times or whether that meant I was recording them maybe later in the evening than I normally would. I would use my original syllabus as rough guidelines in terms of, hey, this is the material that I want to cover this week, or this is by when I'm trying to get a rough draft out of my students. And in order to compensate for our lack of regular stable meeting times, I would use a Google Doc so Google could sponsor us for the segment. I'd create one each week, and I offered my availability to students between Monday and Thursday. What they had to do was sign up, put their name, tell me which class or classes they wanted to talk to me about. They would tell me if it was an individual meeting, such as, hey, I need to go over my paper, or I need to talk to you about a problem going on, or if other people in their class could join in, such as for a test review or to go over class material.
And I'm thinking I may institute that with Google Forms. You know, why are you needing to come to meetings? Can it be something that we do during a normal class time, or does it have to be something individual? You don't need to tell me specifically what it is. Just tell me what kind of problem we're talking about. Is it more personal? Is it more school-based? You know, what's going on here? So I might do that. I might turn that into a Google form. I'll have to pick your brain after we finish recording. I know that my campus's administration was really trying hard to make sure we all stayed in the loop, and I really appreciated that. They've done a lot to make sure the lines of communication stayed open, but compulsively checking my email was not good for my state of mind. And so I had to set some limits on how often I would do it. And so I decided I'm not checking my email after 9 o'clock at night, and I'm not checking it before 10 in the morning, because if I do, I'm going to stress out. And I really had to make sure that I maintained what I had already said at the beginning of classes. I am not logging in after sundown on Friday or until sundown on Saturday. And that helped in some ways, but it was also a hurdle to jump, because I remember the first couple of weeks thinking, well, what about the students? What about the students? What about the students? And just driving myself crazy. And I had to set some boundaries with myself on that.
The hurdle that I'm feeling the most right now comes as a result of me relaxing and extending due dates until the end of the semester. And I did that. I took away late penalties in order to give my students a sense of leniency, because I understand that some or many of them are essential workers. They may have to take care of family. They may not have consistent internet access or computer access the way they did when campus was open. And because we're right up at the end of our semester, I'm now going through a grading crunch, going through all of the term papers that my students submitted. And while it's rough, I'm a lot better with me having to shoulder that load than dumping it onto my students.
Another hurdle, fairly personal, was arranging use of our living space with my husband. We live in a two-bedroom apartment, and staying home all the time is not normal for either of us. So we had to sit down and talk about when he and I would be in our offices and when we wouldn't, because he actually has an office. One of the two bedrooms in this apartment is basically his office, but my office is the corner of the living room. And so working out my schedule involved not just my students, but also my partner, to make sure that I wasn't holding office hours, say, at a time when he needed to watch something on Netflix, because this was the only place that he could do it, was in the living room.
And for me, a really big mental hurdle was wondering if I'm doing enough. But that word enough is so ambiguous, it's so wide, that it's easy to feel like no matter what I do, I should be doing more. So that meant I had to learn to set weekly and daily goals, meant recording maybe a lecture or two for a class, or work on revising my PowerPoint slides, writing down ideas for research, or emailing people. And what that did was it gave me something I could look at and check off as I went through my day. And just having that visual of things that I had actually done helped alleviate a lot of stress. And the bonus was it helped me see where I was going on various projects. I could see, hey, I've recorded a lot of lectures for my deviant behavior class, but I really need to get cracking on a lecture for theory or for my law class. And so it would let me kind of play catch up and get onto that consistent schedule to help my students.
Yeah, I also had to realize how stressed I had really been before things closed down. And I had to learn to set some things aside, like this podcast, while starting to do things that help my mental health. So I've completed something like 5 or 6 beadwork projects in the last 6 weeks, and most of them are gifts for other people. And I found a mental health professional to help me work on some things that really I'd been using work to ignore. And I'm going to put a link to a video blog about toxic productivity in the show notes. And that might help some of you who are feeling the pressures that Denor was talking about, you know, that I'm not doing enough, that I haven't written a novel during COVID. If you're not a novelist, that's not a reasonable expectation. Or I haven't learned, you know, Italian and Spanish and French during this. That's not reasonable either. Or I have to create the world's next artistic masterpiece. None of these are reasonable things. So we're going to link to this video blog about toxic productivity in the show notes in the hopes that it might help some of you kind of cope with this, I'm not doing enough, or there's more I have to do, or the shouldas or the gottas that are plaguing many people right now.
I'd like to transition from the hurdles that we've had to overcome and talk about what we've learned. And one of the big lessons that I've gotten from this is that compassion and kindness go a really, really long way with students. It's going to stick with them a lot more than any specific lesson or lecture. And for some of us, that might be a shock, right? We got into teaching because we like to nerd out about our material. We're passionately curious. But odds are, a lot of our students are taking our classes because it's something to work towards their degree. They might not care about our material as much as we do, and that's fine, right? That's always going to be the case. But what students really are going to take away is whether we were compassionate and kind for them. They're going to remember that, I think, a lot more favorably than the professors that demanded extra work or were extra strict with how they ran their classes. Because when you treat your students as people and not just as students, you're acknowledging their humanity. And that's something that people really value and appreciate.
I got to say that I noticed in the last few weeks, suddenly you and I both were getting a lot of emails from students saying, I can't tell you how much it means to me that you were kind about this, or that you reduced the workload here and recognized that we had other things beyond your class. So many of my professors didn't. And folks, if you're not getting letters like that from your students, if you're not getting emails like that from your students, maybe look at why. Because I speak as a veteran control freak. Okay, if you look up control freak in the dictionary, my picture will be next to it. And I've had to learn, and this is a lesson that life keeps throwing at me, that I can try to control everything, but that no plan survives contact with reality. And so I've had to learn how to adjust, sometimes on the fly, to do what my students need from me in order to support their learning. For some students, that meant I became a listening ear during office hours. For others, I became a mentor and guide when they could not figure out how to handle the increased stressors that were brought on by the pandemic and what it required of them. Now, that doesn't mean that I gave up my entire life and became, you know, a daddy for all of my students any more than I would expect another professor to become a mommy or daddy for their students. But I like to think that I came across as sort of the avuncular uncle, you know, that they could come to and grouse about, oh my God, my calculus class is requiring this and my physics class is requiring that, and I just don't have the time to do this annotated bibliography in your class because they're demanding so much of me. And then I was able to say, well, you don't have to. And so I just started emphasizing that with students, both in individual interactions with office hours or an email, but also every week in my announcements. My last few weeks of announcements were, remember, this semester is going to have a big damn asterisk by it. People are going to be having to take your grade in this class and in every class you take this semester with at least a grain, if not a full shaker of salt. So don't worry too much. Focus now on just passing the classes and getting on with your life. Focus on getting to the C. And once you've got the C, if you want to keep going and you've got the time and you've got the energy, great. And if you don't worry about it. And so I've learned that when I relax control, my students often do better. And for the few students who really need that kind of one-on-one guidance, if I'm not trying to control everything, I can exert that control with that student and say, okay, you got to do these four assignments and this other one in order to reach the C. And I need to see that by the end of this week, okay?
I learned that teaching online is a vastly different beast than in-person teaching. And I also learned that my students and I prefer in-person teaching to online. I love being able to teach in real time. I love being able to see what material makes sense to my students and I can move on. And honestly, even seeing that confusion going, okay, that part didn't come out so clear. How can I work on this? It's something I really value and I enjoy because I enjoy being able to have that conversation with my students about the material. And teaching online, I don't get it to the same extent because I have fewer students meeting with me in a meeting on Zoom than I do in a typical class, whether it's due to obligations, lack of internet access, lack of available time. I'm just going to get fewer people in a Zoom meeting than I'm going to get in class. But just because I prefer teaching in person to online doesn't mean that teaching online has to be ineffective. It just means having to learn how to teach in a new modality on the fly and be effective at doing so. And this semester, that effectiveness might have been through the material that I conveyed, but I think a lot more of it is what Adam and I have talked about learning when to relax. Not so much the standards, but relaxing due dates, giving that flexibility, and showing compassion.
And I'm an experienced online teacher, and I enjoy teaching online as well, but I will admit, you know, I did miss my students. Now, there were a few students who really made up for that by coming in like 3 or 4 times a week. Once one of them said, you know, you seemed so sad in your last video announcement that I just wanted to check on you and make sure you were okay. And I'm like, aw. So the thing is that it is different. That doesn't mean it's worse or better. It just means it's different. And although I'm better adjusted to teaching online than Denora is, I also miss that in-person interaction with my students. The thing is, even though we both love that in-person interaction with our students, we also both accept that right now, it's not only not possible, but dangerous. We've got to keep the curve flattened. We've got to keep the line raised. We've got to keep our students safe first, and ourselves. So in order to make sure that it's not entirely nightmare producing, I've learned how to bring some positivity, not positive thinking, not rah, rah, yay, you know, everybody has to be happy all the time, but ways to make it less of a burden, to make it less of a drudge. One practice I adopted actually was to congratulate my students when they've reached the passing score. And I didn't used to do that, but this semester it just became critical to emphasize, look, a C is good enough. It means you've passed the class. And if you have other things you need to focus on, I want you to do that. So if a student emailed me for their grade in the past few weeks and it was a C or better, which is possible in a standards-based grading class, I always responded with, well, first, I want to congratulate you on passing the class. Your letter grade is whatever it is. So that they started off reading that knowing my class was one thing that was no longer their problem if that's what they needed to do. For students who hadn't yet reached a C, I would tell them their grade and I would tell them exactly which assignments they needed to complete in order to reach the C. And then I would tell them, and I know you can do this, because you wouldn't be in this college if you couldn't do this.
Adam congratulated his students. One of the things that I started doing was posting various resources to students. And not only were these things like, hey, here's internet access through Spectrum or through Comcast. These were things like finding a webcam of the Northern Lights and posting it for my students. These were things like posting ASMR videos, which are just really soothing sounds designed to help a person relax or to sleep. And I would post that for students and I'd tell them, hey, if this helps you or helps someone you care about, by all means, use them. So it was kind of taking that caring approach in the classroom, but extending it to their lives. And that was a positive thing I learned. A little bit of a negative thing I learned was about Zoom fatigue and eye strain really early on. This meant that I had to learn to space out my meetings, or I would have to close my camera even during meetings and just talk while looking out a window for sunlight, because too much time or concentrated time looking at a screen and my eyes got tired and I got cranky. I learned also about Zoom bombing, thankfully not through my own classes, but reading about people whose classes had been disrupted. So I learned to post links to my students with a password so that only they would have access to that meeting room at the same time as I was in there.
And I also read about students who would do things like post the password to Reddit or to 4chan and ask people to come in and Zoom bomb. And so what I did, I didn't put a password on, but I did set up a waiting room. So you couldn't come in unless I let you in. And if I didn't know who you were, you didn't get to come in. And I let my students know in advance, I might ask you in a chat, what's your student number? Or something else that I know that only you would know. And I'm not going to tell you all the things I might ask. And you should know better than to give that information to anyone. So be aware, you will be checked to see if you're really you.
I've also learned to use the waiting room, and I've had people show up where it just tells me iPhone or Android. And I'll message people in the waiting room saying, I need to know who you are before I let you in. Because if it's just an iPhone or an Android, that could be anyone. And it could be a student. It could also be someone from outside of class. And I don't know who that person is if they're not willing to let me know.
And I also had to walk some students through, like, I had one student who was in a place that did not have good internet access, and they kept trying to log in with their phone without it being plugged in with video. And what would happen is the video would lock up their phone, it would completely drain their battery, their audio wouldn't work, they couldn't hear me. And so I finally sent them an email saying, Dear Sam, you need to be aware this is what's happening when you log in. I want you to log in without your audio on and without your video on, and then just turn on your audio only. And then we were able to have phone calls, but they kept saying they were really frustrated that they couldn't see me while we talked, that it was really important to them to be able to, or actually for me to see them, you know, for us to have a video conversation. And I had to talk about how sometimes we have to just adjust around that. And I'm sorry about that. I actually, thinking about that, I published to my learning management system. I said, here are the procedures for getting into the Zoom room. First, do this. Make sure your name is your full name as it shows on my roster. Second, do this. You know, check your audio, check your video. Third, do this. Fourth, do this. So it was a list of like six or seven things with links to, in several places, it was links to troubleshooting places on Zoom, you know, on their website to say, here's how you troubleshoot your video. Here's how you troubleshoot your audio. So that by the time they logged in, their name was correct and the information that they were presenting to me was correct. And they had already worked out the problems with audio and video. And then I made that a pinned announcement, meaning it was the first announcement they would always see when they got into the class on the LMS, so that they would be able to see it and say, okay, if I want to go to the Zoom room, here's the Zoom room number, here's a link, and here's what I have to do before I go in. So then I stopped getting Jason's Android or Adam's iPhone. I stopped getting those and I started getting full names. I also relaxed my requirements for incompletes. As Denor said, we're not lowering the standards, but we're relaxing a little bit. In a normal semester, a student would have to have been keeping up with the class and submitting their work regularly in order to qualify for an incomplete. But this semester, I've identified several students who needed incompletes because of COVID interfering with their lives. In at least one case, a student had a death in their immediate family. Like, I'm going to demand that they have all their work caught up in order to be able to get an incomplete. That's not compassionate. And that goes back to what Denor said earlier about compassion. And of course, we're going to talk about striking a balance between compassion and rigor as we go forward with this podcast for the rest of this year, at least. Last, we'd like to talk about where we are going from here. And
I know that when I teach online, I'm going to continue having asynchronous components to my classes. And that means I'm always going to post slides ahead of time. And I might continue to record my lectures on the learning management system. Or I might record and upload the class-wide meetings that I have with students, or my open meetings, where we discuss material, but I will not require 40 or more students to meet for the full in-class time online, because I know that's not realistic. And I would much rather my students be able to learn on their own time than not learn at all. And if that means I teach asynchronously in part, then so be it. Now, when I teach in person, I always pepper my students with questions as we go through material, because I want to start conversations. I want to talk with them, not talk at them. When I teach online, I can do that practice of asking a lot of questions with the students who actually meet with me online. But what I've also done this semester that I think I'll continue to do is writing open-ended questions and have students either respond to each other on discussion boards, or they can respond to the questions to me directly via email, and I count that as participating in class. And I've had students who didn't speak up in class, but all of a sudden were emailing me participation questions, and it really made a big difference in their overall grade.
Now, for the coming semester, I know that all my classes will be completely online. A few courses on the campus will have to be in person because of hands-on requirements, like, for example, nursing classes that have a clinical component, or some art classes where, you know, if you're in a ceramics class, you don't have a kiln at home, so you've got to do it on campus. But they're going to be observing social distancing guidelines and CDC guidelines for that. None of my courses have a hands-on component. I teach sociology. So I've already made a few decisions about how I'm going to run my classes based in part on this spring 2020 COVID experience. So like Denor's, they will once again be asynchronous. For the students who do need the regularity of a class meeting to keep themselves engaged and accountable, I'm going to hold optional synchronous check-ins during scheduled class times in Zoom. So the classes were scheduled on campus originally when I accepted them, and they're still going to have those times marked. So I will hold optional synchronous check-ins, but I will not be holding them for the entire class period, because that creates Zoom fatigue and eye strain for everybody, and it also increases the chance of people Zoom bombing the class or trying to disrupt it. So early in the semester, maybe in the first week or two of class, I'm gonna send out Google Forms surveys and ask students which half of this class would work better for you for group check-in like this, the first 45 minutes or the last 45 minutes. And based on the majority vote, that's when I'll have Zoom open. So for my, for my 8:30 to 9:45 class, I'm gonna ask them, do you want class open from 8:30 to 9:15? Or do you want it open from 9 to 9:45? Which one? And whichever one gets the most votes, that's when that class is going to be open on, I think, on Tuesday or Thursday, right? Second, I'm going to hold my office hours at the same time each day all week long, because although I couldn't do that before, partly because of when classes met and also because I shared an office with two or three other adjuncts, that's not an issue this semester. So I'm going to hold them at the same time each day all week long, so students never have to wonder, when is Dr. Sanford in his office? I'm also going to use a program called Calendly so that they can set up 15-minute meetings if they can't get to my office hours. The third thing I'm planning on doing is establishing discussion boards where students must ask questions about lecture's content and require them to complete some percentage of those discussion boards to show engagement with the material. And that's also going to serve as my attendance counter for that day. So if we have a lecture on September 2nd and it's the Anomi lecture and they ask the question about it, then they have attendance credit for September 2nd. If you ask a question on the discussion board, you get attendance for that day's lecture. Even if you answered that question or asked that question in the middle of August and that class doesn't meet till September, that's okay. You know, you get credit for whatever day that lecture is corresponded to. The fourth thing I'm planning on doing is discussion boards with questions for students to answer, just as I've done with all my online classes in the past, and that's going to basically recreate my in-class activities. And finally, in terms of communication, I'm going to be putting up a video message for all my classes on the LMS at either the start or end of every week. And I got to say, this is something I was reluctant to do before this semester, because I participated in a course redesign thing with my university back a couple years ago. And one of the people in my group, in my cohort for this thing where we were talking about effective online teaching, said, you've got to give them a video message every week. You've got to let them see you and hear you. And if you don't, they don't experience you as a person. And I was really uncomfortable about that. But then this semester, having met most of my students in person beforehand, allowed me to actually start doing that with all my classes, including the two that had already been online originally. And now I'll never go back. I will always make sure I put up a video message for my classes every week. And probably at the end of every week, I'll say, okay, we're going into next week. Next week is week three. Here's what's coming up. And I'm also going to schedule some text messages to go out through Remind a couple times a week, mainly to keep my students in the loop and remind them that they're in an online class. Because one of the biggest problems students reported this semester was remembering they were in a class when they didn't have any in-person meetings.
Now, in terms of the podcast, we're going to change a couple of things going forward. First, we're going to put out our regular episodes on Mondays, just as we have in the past. But we're also going to put out COVID-specific episodes on Thursdays. These new episodes will be specifically related to the problems caused by COVID for educators and students, and, if possible, ways to deal with these problems.
Second, we started a Facebook group for this podcast about a year ago, but it looks like nobody's joined it, and we'd really like to invite our listeners to join us there, ask questions, start conversations, and find some community, especially at this time when we all need community. So you can find our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/LME, that's like Learning Made Easier, podcast.
So that's what we have for you in this episode. If you're finding this podcast helpful, please share it with your friends. We're always hoping to get new subscribers so we can help more people. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Android. We're hosted on blueberry.com. Also, we would really appreciate it if you wrote a review of this podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Be sure to join us next week on Monday for episode 56, when we'll talk about basic self-care for people who learn. You've been listening to Learning Made Easier, a podcast about how we learn, how we teach, and how they overlap.
We want to say thank you to all of our supporters on Patreon who make this podcast possible.
If you want to support us, please go to www.patreon.com/learningmadeeasier.
We look forward to seeing you next week.